Second segment on the program this morning, growing awareness of the dangers of secondhand tobacco smoke, backed by a lot of research, has led to many restrictions on smoking in public buildings, bars, restaurants, even outdoor areas like parks and playgrounds. But now research into something called third-hand smoke is raising concern. Third-hand smoke, or THS for short, is caused by residue left behind by smokers, even if they don't light up. Our guest this morning has completed some groundbreaking research into third-hand smoke. Peter DiCarlo is an associate professor in the Department of Chemistry at Drexel University in Philadelphia and joins us this morning on The Exchange. Good morning, Peter.
Morning.
So can you define what third-hand smoke is? It sounds like, to the average person, like something that just got made up.
Yeah, I get that question a lot. So basically, it's the residue of smoke that's left behind long after the smoke that you can see in the air has dissipated, has gone away. You can remember those times when bars were still smoking, the smell on your clothes after you've been in one of those areas. That's essentially third-hand smoke. It slowly comes back off of your clothing or surfaces that have been exposed to smoke, and we found it can get back into particles in the air, and we can breathe it.
So you actually conducted your research at your own university. Can you walk us through how you measured the third-hand smoke?
Yeah. Well, let me start by saying we had no idea we were going to find third-hand smoke. And I looked at the proposal we wrote, and there was no mention of it at all in our original proposal to do this work. But what we were doing was looking at what happens when air pollution from outside gets brought into a building. So most buildings have ventilation systems that bring that air in. And so we were looking at what happens when that occurs and what the indoor concentrations from particles from outdoors look like. So when we were making these measurements, we were measuring in an unoccupied classroom at my university. It was summertime, so really no students were in there. And the building's been non-smoking for about 30 years. So we're making these measurements. They're detailed chemical measurements of the particles. And we found this signature in the particles that we eventually associated with third-hand smoke, and it took some detective work to do that. But what we found was that there were a couple of smokers in an office that was on the same ventilation system as the classroom, and there was also an illegal smoking balcony outside that people were smoking on even though they weren't supposed to, and potentially smoke from that made its way into the building and got on surfaces in the building. But essentially, it was cigarette residue in a non-smoking building, and it made up about 30% of the total particle mass that we measured indoors. And so, this is something we monitor outdoors for health reasons. High concentrations of particulate matter outdoors are known to cause a bunch of problems. And so indoors, when we see this, and now we can trace some of it to this cigarette residue, that's quite concerning.
Yeah, we're quite in the Pacific Northwest, quite aware of outdoor smoke in the summertime with the bad forest fires we've been having in recent years. So we obviously know about the health dangers of smoking, and the health dangers of secondhand smoke have now also been really well established. But what about thirdhand smoke? So, for example, I can typically tell when a smoker has been in, say, a rental car or a hotel room before me. So there's that level of awareness I think we all have. But when I smell that, what's happening to my body? Am I really being exposed to carcinogens?
It seems like you are. And so I'm not a health researcher. I'm more of kind of an atmospheric chemist. But in researching this paper that we just published, I learned that there have been a lot of people studying the effects of third-hand smoke. And most of the ways that people have considered exposure to third-hand smoke is just from touching surfaces. If someone smokes indoors, it gets into carpeting, into couch cushions, things like that. And so most people have studied the health impacts from physically touching a surface and either having those chemicals go into your body through your skin or, in the case of children, babies crawling on floors tend to put things in their mouth. They can ingest some of those chemicals through that type of behavior. So the health studies from that type of third-hand smoke exposure have been looked at, and it's pretty similar health impacts to what you would find from smoking or secondhand smoke. There's increased risk of lung cancer, asthma, rates increase when people are exposed to high levels of third-hand smoke. But the health impacts are kind of are not as well known as the direct smoke or secondhand smoke. It's still an active area of research for the health community.
We're talking with Peter DiCarlo, an associate professor of the Department of Chemistry at Drexel University in Philadelphia, about his work on third-hand smoke this morning here on the Jefferson Exchange. You can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760, or you can send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org if you have some questions about third-hand smoke. Maybe you have some experiences you'd like to share about this as well. So, Peter, are you at a place in your research? I mean, you mentioned that you're not a health researcher, you're an atmospheric chemist, but are you at a place where you can or this might lead to recommendations to public health officials about third-hand smoke? I mean, where does this lead? Would you recommend banning tobacco entirely based on this research?
I mean, I think there are plenty of reasons to pursue that even without our research, but certainly limiting the potential exposure to third-hand smoke is something that I think is something that should be part of the discussion for any future policies on tobacco control. And I think, you know, in the U.S. is in many ways going in the right direction. I know at my university that smoking is banned within 30 feet of a door or an air intake. And so those are good steps in the right direction to reduce the amount of third-hand smoke that can get into a building. But people smoking in their private vehicles or in their home, that's a way that smoke can really get into their clothing and on their bodies, and then they take that with them wherever they go. And I don't think that we have the ability to regulate, you know, what people do in their private spaces. So, you know, unless tobacco products are banned, which I think that probably is going to be a difficult thing to do, there's always going to be the potential for that type of exposure, that type of residue being brought into spaces that are non-smoking.
But perhaps with this increased awareness, if somebody gets into a rental car, for example, and says, oh, there's been a smoker in here, they might actually take greater action than they would have otherwise before this research.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. I agree with that. I mean, I have two little boys. I have a 4-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. And now that I've done this research, I'm just a little bit more aware of the places I take them and try to, you know, limit their exposures. You know, developing children are more susceptible to chemicals than, you know, a full-grown adult like I am.
So I read your paper, and I'm not a scientist. I don't play one on TV or anything like that. But if I interpreted it correctly, the one of the dangers here is that when this residue is left behind, it can actually become airborne. Is that a mechanism that you identified in your research? Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, no, that's exactly kind of what happens. This residue gets on indoor surfaces, and so even in this non-smoking building, it's going to accumulate. It slowly comes off the wall through some chemical reactions, typically with chemicals such as ammonia. And once it comes back into the air in the room, it can then go into particles. And this is what I primarily study. And these particles are, you know, 1 micrometer in diameter. And just for scale, hair is roughly 100 micrometers in diameter. So we're talking about particles that are, you know, 100 times smaller than the diameter of your hair and even smaller than that. And these third-hand smoke chemicals will then go into those particles and react and stay in the particles. Once they're there, because we ventilate most of our buildings in the U.S., either homes or office buildings and spaces like that, those particles can effectively be transported from the room where the smoke residue is to any other room in that shared ventilation system. And so the classroom, while unoccupied, was linked to this office where there were smokers and close to that smoking balcony. And so we think that what actually happened was the third-hand smoke residue got into the particles elsewhere and then got moved into the classroom through the ventilation system.
And you know, to be clear about it, that office where there were smokers, they weren't smoking in the office. They were smoking outside, but they were just
Correct.
Occupying the office. Okay.
Exactly. No, they're non-smoking building for sure.
The topic is third-hand smoke here on the Jefferson Exchange this morning. We're going to take a call from Vince in Eugene. Good morning, Vince.
Good morning. I just wanted to say I could really relate to this show. I'm 67 now, but when I was a child, both my parents were chain smokers, and they smoked everywhere in our apartment in New York City, and even the bathrooms, and I couldn't get away from it. I was very sensitive. My mother smoked while she was cooking. My father smoked while watching television in the living room. And finally, I had to ask them if they would please not smoke in my sister's bedroom. So she and I could retreat there to do our homework and play and whatever. But it got into our closets and on our clothes. And one day I went to school, and the teacher said I had to meet with the principal and a counselor. And I went to the office, and the principal said, "You seem like a bright kid. We're really concerned that you're smoking so much." And I said, "Smoking? I don't smoke." And they said, "We could smell it on you." And I said, "Oh, that's not me." I said, "My parents are chain smokers, and they won't stop. And it's everywhere in our apartment. And, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. I can't tell my parents they can't smoke in their own apartment." And I couldn't wait till I turned 17 and went off to college and, you know, had a dorm room with a non-smoker, and I could finally breathe.
Well, thanks for that story, Vince. So, Peter DiCarlo, it sounds like Vince was exposed to a lot of secondhand smoke, but then he himself became a vector, if we want to use that term, of thirdhand smoke.
Yeah, no, that definitely sounds like that's the case. You know, some good news similar to Vince's story. I ran into a friend of mine at the airport yesterday, and he is a smoker, but he said he read my article, and he is going to be quitting smoking based on that. He has a couple little boys as well. So that was, you know, some good news that maybe the paper is having an impact and a positive impact on, you know.
So, Peter, did your work go on to identify the particular substances that were in these airborne results of third-hand smoke? I would imagine that with the differing chemistry of the air, there might be different compounds in different rooms.
So the third-hand smoke residue, we kind of identified a class of compounds that are prevalent in third-hand smoke, and we confirmed this using laboratory studies where we actually kind of smoked a cigarette in my lab, not personally, but using a pump to pull air into a vessel, and showed that we could deposit smoke inside of a glass jar, and that smoke could come off slowly and have the same chemical signature as the stuff we were seeing in the classroom. And so this type of compound is what we call reduced nitrogen species. So similar to nicotine, kind of on a compositional basis, but a whole variety of those types of compounds are known to occur with cigarette smoke. So it's just that kind of class of compound.
So getting back to our discussion of hotel rooms and rental cars, because I think that's where a lot of people encounter this, the hospitality industry, as we've all experienced, has gone from non-smoking rooms. So you'd be in a non-smoking room next to a smoking room, which didn't really work very well. Now they have non-smoking floors. But it sounds like your research could lead to some people or companies in the hospitality industry actually having non-smoking buildings. I mean, do you actually have concluded that maybe a single smoker coming through a building can contaminate the whole building? Or does that overstate your conclusions?
I mean, that's maybe a bit of an overstatement. It really is a matter of how much one person can bring in. But certainly, you know, at some level there's going to be contamination. And then at what level that reaches something that poses a health risk, I think is something for future research. But yeah, if one smoker comes in, we could probably chemically detect some of that residue using our instrumentation. But as I said, it's a question of at what level that becomes a health problem for the other residents of the space.
Well, this research you've done is getting a lot of attention. What are the next steps for you? You mentioned further research.
So a few different avenues. I'm trying to partner with some health researchers to look into what are the health impacts of this and how serious this might be. And then another avenue that we're interested in looking at is e-cigarettes, which are becoming much more common, especially with teenagers and young people. and more commonly used indoors. So although it's not combustible tobacco, it still has nicotine in it, and nicotine is one of those molecules that can participate in this third-hand smoke residue that gets back into the particles. And so, you know, there's interest in thinking about that and what e-cigarettes might contribute to the indoor environment too. So I've got a student working on that, and she has a lot of friends who use e-cigarettes, and so it's certainly a concern, especially for the college-age kids.
And I think that the laws about e-cigarettes around the country are a lot different in certain locales than laws for smoking.
Mm-hmm.
So last question I have for you. Have you heard from the tobacco industry yet?
No, I haven't, you know, had any phone calls from anyone from the tobacco industry. I guess I'm not terribly surprised. I'm not really expecting them, but I've had a lot of phone calls from other researchers who are interested and want to pursue this this area of research.
Because it seems like when the initial research came out about the health effects of smoking, the health effects of secondhand smoke, there were competing studies that started showing up out of the tobacco industry. I was just wondering if you had seen any evidence of that yet.
I have not, but, you know, it takes a little bit of time for them to do a study to try to show something else. So, you know, perhaps in the future we'll see some studies that are trying to counter what we found in our work.
And lastly, what piece of advice would you give to somebody who is very concerned about their health and doesn't want to be exposed to tobacco products based on your research? What would you tell them?
That's a good question. I would tell them to, you know, like they try to probably avoid secondhand smoke, that they should try to avoid places where smokers have been. If they smell it, they should probably go to another area. And, you know, you can't smell it. This is not something we can smell in my office or in the classroom. It's there. So they may be exposed to it, but they might not know. And so it's really just reasonable precautions that you can take. But yeah, that's about all I can say.
Peter DiCarlo is a associate professor of chemistry at Drexel University in Philadelphia. He joined us this morning to talk about his research on third-hand smoke. Peter, thanks for being with us on the Jefferson Exchange.